Now, the pandemic has taken a toll on mental health for a lot of people, and that includes children.
According to research from the CDC, the number of mental health-related emergency room visits for kids under the age of 11 rose by nearly 25% between last April and October, and that's compared to the same time frame in 2019.
In a new piece, our next guest spoke to people in the mental health community who say they're beginning to focus on younger kids who have seen a growing need for mental health care, but not always a lot of access to that kind of care.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a young person who's dealing with stress or anxiety during the pandemic? Or maybe you're an adult and this sounds like a young person in your life. If you're a parent, how did virtual schooling affect your child's moods if they plan to go back in person to in-person school in the fall? How are they dealing with that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org.
Christina Carone covers mental health and the intersection of culture and healthcare for the Well section of the New York Times. Her latest piece is titled 8-Year-Olds in Despair: The Mental Health Crisis is Getting Younger. Christina, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
According to some of the people you talked to, Christina, we hadn't always thought of kids under 13 as being vulnerable to mental health problems. Can you talk about how that's changing?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, a lot of people might assume that because of some of the more recent studies that have come out, that this is a problem that's related directly to the pandemic. But actually, if you look at the data going back to 2016, the truth is that the number of kids who have been coming into the ER who are under 13 for mental health reasons has actually been rising year over year. And as one doctor told me, it's almost like the pandemic threw gasoline on embers that were already glowing. So this has actually been a problem for quite some time. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
What are some of the reasons behind that?
Well, initially, I think one of my big takeaways is that we need more preventive efforts. We need better screening in schools and also in pediatricians' offices to start identifying kids who need help earlier so that they never have to end up in the ER. Right now, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends mental health screening for all children 12 and older during well child visits, but it's actually not standard practice to screen children who are younger than that. And among the younger kids, unfortunately, there are a lot of unmet needs. Kids who are struggling with underlying psychological problems, but who aren't receiving treatment. And this is in part because finding a provider can be pretty difficult. There's a shortage of child psychiatrists, and actually all types of mental health providers report being busier than ever, especially now during the pandemic. I mean, I think I'd also be remiss, though, if I didn't also mention social media and how that can affect a child's mental state. Now, that wasn't actually the focus of my piece, but it was really interesting how often it came up in my interviews. And it seems that kids are either getting ideas about how to harm themselves from these platforms, or they are, in some cases, just kind of fixated on people who are talking about really dark, difficult stuff that does nothing to help their mood improve, or in fact, it may actually have the opposite effect. So that's definitely something for parents to be mindful of, because for many kids, screen time restrictions have been loosened during the pandemic.
And Christina, you share some stories from kids who are experiencing this. Can you tell us a little bit about a kid you report about? You call her Marie, not her real name. Can you tell us her story?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So Marie is an 11-year-old, and she had actually been doing pretty well prior to the pandemic. She didn't have any diagnosed psychiatric conditions. She was just kind of a normal kid, right? Who was doing okay. But then the way she described it to me was soon after the lockdown went into effect, she ended up kind of experiencing a lot of loneliness, sadness. She was sort of growing apart from her friend group, and particularly one of her best friends. And that was pretty distressing to her. And as she continued to be kind of isolated, not attending school, not really socializing in person with friends. Although she was seeing them on video or texting, it wasn't the same. And she just started having various anxieties, worrying about losing other people in her life. You know, and one weekday afternoon in October of last year, she was going on this walk. She was telling me she had been having nightmares during this time, like really vivid nightmares. And she just during this walk, while she's listening to music, she just starts to get really upset and she isn't really sure why. And she told me she needed help, but she didn't know who to go to. So she just searched for a suicide prevention hotline on her phone. And at the time, she didn't know if the crisis counselors would really take her seriously. She was telling me when I interviewed her that she thought they might think it was a prank call, or that, you know, she thought she wasn't somehow deserving of making that call. And they, of course, did take her very seriously. And the counselor ended up conferencing in Marie's mother, Jackie, who was actually 25 minutes away by car. And they came up with a plan. They kept Marie safe until Jackie could arrive. And then, you know, the next day, Marie had told her mother that, you know, she had at one point brought scissors into her bedroom with the intention of hurting herself. She just didn't know how to do it. And her mother was shocked, just had not seen this coming. Marie told me she herself hadn't imagined that she would call a suicide hotline that day. It wasn't something she had premeditated. She just kind of did it in the moment. She's doing a lot better now, by the way, I should add. She did eventually start going back to school, and that was helpful for her, although for some kids that actually brings a lot of other anxieties. But in her case, it was particularly helpful to start having those in-person interactions again. She's had a lot of conversations with her mother. She's really opened up to her in a way that she didn't in the months prior, and that has been a huge source of help. But I think making that call was just kind of her way of sort of sounding the alarm so that the adults in her life could know that she was really struggling in that moment.
Christina, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us today.
You're welcome.
That's Christina Carone, reporter for the Well section of the New York Times, who covers mental health. We talked to her today about her recent reporting on young kids struggling with mental health effects of the pandemic, and as you heard, even before the pandemic, and a lack of resources in some places available to help them. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. Anna Moffitt joins us now. She's executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Dane County. Anna, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, hearing Christina's reporting there, Anna, do we see similar things going on here in Wisconsin?
Absolutely, 100%. We see similar trends. I appreciate that she did reference that the place where we were at pre-pandemic really wasn't good either, and we were seeing steady increases in children and youth identifying as having unmet mental health needs, engaging in self-harm and suicidal ideation. And unfortunately, I believe the pandemic has made that worse over time.
For a parent who hears something like Marie's story and thinks, maybe that's my kid now, where do they start? How do they open up that conversation with a kid? How do they seek help?
Well, I think it's really important as parents and caregivers, which I am, is to actually normalize the conversation around mental health and mental wellness. So even before you notice something, just establishing those weekly or daily check-ins with your children and youth to see how they're doing. Now, of course, if you notice a dramatic change in behavior of your child or young youth, then you definitely want to say something and bring it up and not think that it's just going to go away. In particular, too, when we talk about suicidal ideation, based on data from 2017, about 50% of the individuals that were considering suicide actually had a plan. So you do want to talk to your children about things if you're noticing changes in behavior, emotion, sleeping, eating, these types of things.
Anna, can you talk about how to talk about mental health? I think a lot of us grew up in generations where you didn't talk about mental health, considered you, it was a subject maybe to be avoided. If we were brought up that way, how do we have a healthy conversation with our kids so we don't just pass down that attitude?
Sure. Well, I think it's important as parents to talk about our own mental health. So even sharing early on, again, kind of preventative, just sharing with your child, wow, I'm really anxious today. I have this big work meeting. I don't know how it's going to go. I had trouble sleeping, or I'm feeling really down and depressed. One of my coworkers had to put their pet down. So starting to introduce that language early on. And then, again, it's okay to ask someone, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Or are you hurting yourself? Or are you thinking about killing yourself?
Actually, I want to ask about that point, Anna, because we hear the concern, if I ask that, are you hurting yourself? Are you thinking about hurting yourself? A common reason, as I understand it, that people don't want to ask that is they're worried it's going to introduce the idea. It's going to put that idea in someone's head. What do you say about that concern?
Well, that's one of the biggest myths out there around suicide, that if you ask someone about suicidality, that they're more likely to go through with that. And that's not how it bears out. And in fact, if you talk to survivors of suicide, many of them would say, I wish somebody had talked to me about it. And others have said, I didn't do it because someone said they were caring about me and they were there to help me. I think another myth around suicide is people think it's that somebody wants to end their life, and that's not the case when you talk with survivors. What survivors say is that they were in so much pain at that time, they didn't have any other idea how to get rid of the pain other than by completing suicide. So stepping in and being that supportive person and helping them work through the pain is the best thing that you can do.
We're picking up our talk now about mental health for young people, especially but not only during the pandemic, and ways for families to work through mental health crises. Anna Moffitt is with us from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Dane County.
We want to hear your experiences and answer your questions about young people and mental health at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org.
Anna, let's talk about available resources. I know we encourage people to seek help. Is the help out there?
I do believe that there's help out there. I would agree with the previous person is that there are longer wait times to seek professional help. So it's good to be prepared and act sooner than later. I would say, though, you know, being part of the National Alliance, that we provide a lot of services across the state of Wisconsin that are completely free, whether that's programming for parents to help better understand mental illness, programs for children and youth to also understand mental illness and mental wellness and how to take care of themselves. So those are some free resources, but it can be a challenge, and it can be even more challenging in rural parts of the state where you might not have reliable access to broadband. Services may be far away and hard to get to, and you know, and just the wait times can be even longer.
To that point of rural areas, I just saw reporting our neighbors in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, if I read this right, zero available pediatric mental health beds, basically treatment options available in the entire peninsula. They have to go across a bridge or down into Wisconsin. Are there things that you would like to see to increase access to treatment, especially maybe crisis treatment in those rural areas?
Yes, and that's a big topic going on right now, and it's pretty consistent across the state, in particular for children and youth, that there just aren't enough beds for acute care and inpatient care. And so that's correct. People end up having to go to different states as well. If you're in southern Wisconsin, a lot of folks will end up in Illinois or Indiana. So really making sure we have an appropriate number of beds for inpatient care for children and youth as well as for adults.
Now, we are approaching in just a couple months back to school time, and we've had a lot of kids who had, you know, a partial school year or maybe an all virtual school year. And I understand, Anna, that there are concerns, at least for some kids, about anxiety going back to in-person schooling. What kind of thoughts do you have on how parents and maybe educators can help ease that transition?
Well, I think it's going to be important for both parents and educators to prepare students for what are the routines and expectations, and especially too, what are expectations around cleaning and PPE, so that students can feel comfortable going into that space all together. And then I also think, too, really talking again, having those open conversations about how are you feeling about going back. And again, for some kids, they might be really excited to go back to school. But for other kids who have experienced bullying at school or, you know, don't have the same social skills of other students, they may be even more anxious about going back to school. And I think, too, with this pandemic, you're going to have a lot of children and youth that are just worried not just about themselves, but about their families. If somebody gets sick, what if they bring home, you know, the virus, and feeling those kind of concerns.
Can you talk about coordinating families who know that their kids are maybe going to have trouble with that transition? How important is it to coordinate with the teacher or counselor or whatever resources might be available at a school?
Yeah, I really think it's important for parents and caregivers to know who are the designated staff who really are in charge of looking after, like, the social emotional needs of students. And if you have a child that you think might be struggling, reach out, whether it's a guidance counselor, a school social worker, the school psychologist, or maybe the classroom teacher from the prior year, and having that conversation early on, you know, maybe towards the beginning of August, reaching out and saying, hey, this is what's going on in our household. Can we get a plan together so that, you know, my child can return to school and feel good about it and feel less anxious?
Let's bring on a caller now. Mikey is with us in Madison. Mikey, hello.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that as a person who's gone inpatient multiple times, I've almost always found it to be extremely stressful and more of a place to where people will prevent you from committing suicide rather than a place where you will actually get help. And also, I think with just having therapy being provided, I think that there should be a lot of concerns about not just availability, but also the quality of that therapy, because I know many, many people who have had terrible experiences with therapists. I know that I have had some certainly less than satisfactory experience with therapists.
Mikey, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. To her first point, Anna, you know, that inpatient thing is like the emergency room for a physical problem. You get that immediate care you need. How do we make sure that then we translate that into ongoing care that might help avoid the next visit?
Sure. I mean, I think that it is so important to have that continuum of crisis care. And I do appreciate what Mikey said about some experiences with some therapists. I think, too, what we're seeing is a lot of diversification of how people utilize therapy. For a long time, it used to be you sit on the couch, I sit on the couch. That doesn't work for everybody. So really being able to build out what does it look like to support someone's mental health needs. So I do think that's a very important point to raise. I'm sorry, now I forgot what I was talking about.
So you just mentioned her point about quality of therapy, but the translating, okay, you're in that inpatient acute situation. How do we make sure that care keeps going on even after the person leaves the inpatient center?
Right. And so with those inpatient center and within the behavioral health community, it really is important to have step downs and other supports within the community. So we know if you just walk out and you have no support, you're much more likely to be returning to inpatient. So having that intensive outpatient care, having day treatment, having other wraparound services to help that individual transition back into the community and manage their mental health needs successfully.
And Anna, can you leave us with a little more encouragement to maybe not be so Midwestern and be willing to talk about mental health issues with each other and with our kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing is, and whenever I go and speak with groups, I ask people, do you know somebody who has a mental health condition? And everybody raises their hand. So I think people just need to get over this idea that it's just me. It's not. We're all, and now especially coming through the pandemic, we're all coming through a very traumatic situation. And it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to talk about it when you're not okay.
Anna, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
That was Anna Moffitt with the Dane County chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI. And earlier we heard from a New York Times reporter who covers mental health. They both joined us today to talk about youth mental health during the pandemic and what we can expect as many schools reopen in the fall. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The number is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255.